They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy?
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
His brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to an episode filled with horrors that truly scare, I think, most people. The strange and the horrifying stuff that fill our seas.
Filled with monsters, folklore, ghosts, everything in between. Tales of the water. I don't know about you, Brent, but to me, they're both captivating and terrifying.
I submit that you two turds are just pussies.
I submit that you shut the hell up.
Broadcasting from
motion
the lower
carried
dimension, also known as Chicago, with a connection flight to parts unknown, Colorado. We're your hosts and lead. I'm going to go with Jacques Cousteau impersonators this week. My name is Brent Hand. He is David Flora, and the bots are running around as well.
I run for no man.
Keep it up, and we'll see if you can swim. That's what we're going to do. That's what I thought. David! I like yelling. David!
Without get in here! How dare you? Turn in your badge and your gun now!
Nah, you know what? You can keep the gun. It's time to get wet together, is what I'm getting at, David. It's time to get wet.
Wow. I would, I'd be very appreciative if you didn't say that ever again.
Sure, you know, play it cool with the mics around. I get it. But we are talking terrors of said wetness, terrors of the sea. And I don't know if you know this or not, but we didn't come ill-prepared. We got a ringer in this week to talk all about this new documentary dealing with all those watery bastards.
You got it. Director George Popoff makes his triumphant return to the lower fairth this weekend to talk Sideworld, Terrors of the Sea.
Ugh, still no porn directors yet. I guess a bot can dream.
In it, not porn, but in this documentary. I started choking there when he said that. Wow. He takes on some...
dial it back a little
son
bit.
Son of a bitch. I got wetness.
That's what
on
he
my
wanted.
But he takes on some specific sea terrors, very specific, telling us crazy stories dealing with all of them, from monsters to ghosts and everything in between. And George is Bulgarian-born, as you might remember if you've listened to the previous one. He did Sideworld, Haunted Force of England, which was a blast, and we had him talking about all those. But he's been revered for his unique visual style and carefully crafted atmosphere. Also, he's had a couple feature films before this, Hex and The Droving, and they've been praised for their focus on complex themes and characters. And outside of documentaries, just The Droving and The Hex aren't the only ones. He's working on a few more feature films with his company, Rubicon Films. David, before we dive in with George, what's your favorite sea terror? What's the one thing that you think of when you're going boating or something like that? And you're like, I hope I don't run into that. is there such a thing?
I don't know if there's necessarily such a thing, but I love the ghost ship lore out there.
Now, which version of ghost ship? Because there's two types of ghost ship. The ghost ship of like, there's the ghost ship that's actual ghost. It's an entity in and of itself, or the ghost ship as in, they find a derelict ship with the crew missing and no one knows where
I'll
went.
Tell you what, that version, the last one there, is creepier, I think, because you think of the Mary Celeste, you think of the Orang Medan, which they weren't missing. They were just dead and frightened.
The unknown
like,
is almost scarier than the, well, I know you're a ghost.
But I really enjoy the stories of like the Flying Dutchman, you know, where they just see it in a cloud of fog at sea, passes by, and everybody's just like, what the hell? And then that's it.
Davy Jones Locker. Yeah, you know, there's tons of things in that. I think the thing that scares me the most is what's alive down there that we don't know about.
Yeah,
and that fills tomes, I'm sure, of books, the things that we don't know about. And that, to me, is very, very, very scary. especially when it's a couple miles down. You know?
Well, especially when they look like they do, man. Like, that it's nothing but, like, daggers for a mouth and these eyes that are just giant and soulless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they look like nightmare fuel.
Yeah, yeah. And the voice of an angel. It's the craziest thing.
La, 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 la.
But the scruples of a used car salesman, so you know they're evil. They're just all evil, and they're going to lull you with those tunes.
Which is to say, no scruples.
Scrupulous.
Scrupulous.
Yeah, so we're going to go to break real quick, but when we come back, George Popoff joins us to talk Sideworld! Terrors of the Sea, that's up next on Hysteria 51. Hola, David. Me llamo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it, so... It's very high on pronunciation, too, so you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation, yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know? If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I have to go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know, and we don't do long term stuff like this, and this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, MINTMOBILE.com/ Hysteria, Hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Welcome back, Hysteria Nation, and also welcome back, George Popoff. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Really schlumming it with us here in the lower fourth dimension.
Oh man, I love schlumming. Thank you. Thank you very much, and it's great to be back, guys. Yeah, absolutely.
Schlummer's gonna schlum.
Thank you so much, like we said, for coming back on here. And I love that you're really digging your heels into this Fortean world, and it suits you, because we're here to talk about Sideworld Terrors of the Sea, and it was super entertaining and super interesting, because you covered some things that I wasn't really familiar with. So thank you so much. That is it was awesome.
No, thanks, man. Like, that's great to hear. I mean, the thing is, if the fans keep loving it, we'll just keep making more. And there's so many more things to uncover, different topics. And like I said, even Terrors of the Sea, I mean, we have so many other different types of supernatural topics to cover. But even that, I'm already thinking, like, at some point we need to do Terrors of the Sea 2, because there's so much there to explore. You know,
fathoms to explore.
Well, we kind of said that in our last one. You know, you were talking about where do you pick, you know, where to stop and go. You could do an entire series forever on Terrors of the Sea and probably never run out of things to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, that's always interesting to see, like, how many would we do in a cycle before we start repeating some of them. And I think it'll be a while until we want to come back to some of those worlds. But like I said, like, if the interest is there, we'll keep coming back to some of those topics, because they're around the whole world. I mean, with Terrors of the Sea, we opened up a little bit more, but we're still kind of, you know, mainly circling around the British Isles. But I would love to do Terrors of the Sea where it takes place more. You know, there's so many stories around your coasts and around the whole world.
Right. Well, and this isn't your first foray, we said, or rodeo, if you want to call it, into, so to speak. You've had some feature films before this. We talked about before Hex in 2017, The Droving in 2020, and you got several more in development. Plus, you were on here before to talk about your first documentary, Sideworld, Haunted Force of England. What's the driving force for you to switch to the seas, or what made you want to do seas this time? Just to keep it in that same vein, or was that something you've always been interested in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it all comes back to the initial plan of Sideworld, you know, and when me and Jonathan sat down and wanted to plan out the series of documentary, you know, horror feature films, and we wanted to make this series and take it further and make it into a franchise and keep building upon it, we wanted to plan out a little bit further down the line, which I know some other bigger franchises don't like to do that, you know, but I've always been thought that planning ahead is a good thing.
Planning, that's for suckers.
Yeah, that's for suckers. I know. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I knew that after Forest, I wanted to do something that's going to change even the color palette of it, if you want, and kind of the texture of where we've been. And I didn't want to go back to everything being green again and kind of talk about, you know, similar topics. I wanted to feel familiar and people to understand what Sideworld's trying to be. So talking about another different biome of where stories can happen and sort of that particular lore and texture you get was made sense. But at the same time, it felt like let's jump into something fresh that gives you a completely different kind of experience and almost a subgenre of horror that you might think.
Right. And that is totally, you say subgenre horror, man, so many people are scared of water.
Yeah.
You know, I love that they do around here. They'll do little ponds and they'll set up a movie screen and play like Jaws, and you can get on like a float and watch it, because it adds that extra layer of just spookiness when water's involved. Why is it, do you think, that so many people are terrified of water or what lurks beneath, so to speak?
Yeah, it's a strange one, because at the same time you look at us and we really are the blue planet. I mean, water dominates, you know, 75% of everything we have. So, it, you know, it's strange that some people just turn into those you know, the aliens from Signs. It's like let's attack the planet that's covered in water, and you know, and we can all die from it. So a lot of people are still scared of it, even though it should be our thing. But I think that's a lot of that comes with our history, and it's not our natural habitat, and because it's so huge, because it's so vast, and because we've been exploring it, and we've lost so many lives to it. I think there is a lot of that mystery that comes with it, and that fear of the unknown, and to this day we know so little about what's down there and in big part of the oceans, and that just fuels the folklore and the stories, and a lot of them turn out to be true as well. And I think that's another thing, is like how many other paranormal, as we call it, areas or subgenres we have where we just have things that we speculated before now being proven that they're true.
Right. Mm. The thing you said there that, you know, we know so little really blows my mind, because we really do. They've explored so little of the bottom of the oceans and lakes and everything out there. And that is just nightmare fuel for children and adults alike, it feels like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, so many people now have that, like, even just looking at images, it just triggers their thalassophobia of, like, what could be inside and what could... It's unknown as deep space, but at the same time, we know that there's that biome of all kinds of creatures that can exist there. And like I said, so much of our ancestors have a great connection to it, and he has that very weird abusive relationship that we have with the sea. That's sometimes it's romantic and we love it, and it's so such a huge part of our lives, but at the same time it's dangerous and can kill you in a second.
Now, George, this is this being your second version of this type of documentary, I'm wondering what did you learn from the first time? Did you do anything different than the last time? How was it the second time around?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think aside from the obvious things of just changing the types of shots you need and kind of planning everything around the type of environment you're going to be in, I think I wanted to push what makes it more different, because that allows me to experiment a little bit more of what our format is. And the earlier we are in what Sad World is, I think, the more adventurous we need to be to kind of like try with the audience of where our boundaries are and how you keep having it something that you make this well known that this is going to have its own style and be going to be a great hub for all the fans. Then it's going to be something familiar that they can keep coming back to. But at the same time, we don't want to get stale and boring right at the beginning where they know exactly what's going to be. And I think I embrace the sea and the ocean as something that, like I said, I think he had more of a passionate and sort of dynamic sense to it, nature to it, than more than the forest too. Like in forest, there was a lot of stillness, there was a lot of like ghostly figures, and a lot of that came with the biome. And I think with the sea, I really wanted to push that more kind of 19th century romantic horror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That you usually get with that genre. Like they really felt there was a lot of passion, and there is a lot of stories about ghost ships and stories about like ghosts of people who disappeared in the ocean and then they came back, and the sea monsters. That's a lot of the stories, the really well documented first ones originate from about that period between 19th century, and people recalling stories of that and put down in the annals of history. So that dynamicism of the documentary, I think it made it feel a different way. And we kind of explored our tools and how we edit, how we shoot, even more so. So I learned a lot from this one, and I can't wait to implement a lot of the tools we learned here and expand on some of them on the future ones. I mean, the next one we're working on at the moment, but yeah, like it was a great sense to try and push the boundaries of what Sad World can be.
Well, that's great, because you know, from the first one to this one, they're so polished. And mm-hmm. One thing you did that I really liked is you break it up. Like in the first one, you had each of the different forests, and this one you broke it up into chapters: ghost ships, sea monsters, spectral sailors, and mermaids. How did you fall on those? Were there others that you decided not to do, or were those like right off the bat? You're like, I want to cover these. How'd you decide on the chapters?
Yeah, absolutely. I think with the reason why we did it in forest as well is because we picked the forest that we felt that they're gonna kind of do a little bit of a narrative throughout that you're going to get, a classic experience to begin with, something very fairy tale-y. Then the next forest had stories that were a bit more contemporary and so on and so forth. So similar thing here. I thought that we need to pick the topics that you know, are going to give you a pretty rich sense of how expansive and different those different subgenres of nautical horror and legends can be. You know, that, you know, the mermaids are, you know, very fairy tale like, and of course the sea monsters are, you know, very cryptid like, and same thing, you have ghosts, you have your ghost ships, and you even have different types of ghost ships. Are you talking about the ship that is just they find without anyone on board, or are you talking about the ship that is a ghost that's just an apparition, which is the ones that we mostly talk about? So it helps you weave the narrative in, like, what I always think about. I think in, as a director, kind of your most important job is, instead of, you know, doing any one specific job, it's like your job is to be the best viewer, to be the best audience member, and to really learn, like, okay, what is the experience that we're going through? And if someone comes in, it's like Terrors of the Sea, right away you're watching this, like, you know, you've seen Sideworld before, maybe you haven't, but you kind of get the idea that we're going to be going into this paranormal folklore and all these legends. Opening on the ghost ships and something that can be so massive and kind of man-made, you know, vessel, and at the same time that itself can have this hugely expansive kind of like apparition that is kind of contrary to the ghost is just like in the corner of your room. That's something so huge and something so massive can be a ghost like that and can just appear out of the fog. I thought that will make it special when you know that this is a different type of documentary. And we also open on a witness account from what happened to be King George. So it kind of puts you in the right space.
I loved that you opened with the ghost ship. It hooked me right away with this.
Well, I like that too. Like you said, when you said ghost ships in the beginning, your mind, well, not your mind, my mind kind of went to, you know, like it's like the Mary Celeste, like the ships that are, that are you found and they're cruise missing, but that's not really what you focused on, which was a nice refreshing thing. And then you went into the Goodwin Sands. Holy hell.
Yeah.
You know, I
never heard of this.
Right. I think I knew the name, but I didn't know 13 ships and 1,900 men died in one disaster there. I love it. You talked about there's been over 1,000 shipwrecks. Some of them are still like sticking out of the sands there. It's just a crazy place. And then you have all the sightings of ghost ships. Some of them come every 50 years. And you put it forward an interesting thought of, is this kind of a, I know it's an overused term, but the Bermuda Triangle, like, is this place what needs the blood, you know? Is this place what is I don't want to say alive, but causing this, or is it just really just a horribly treacherous place that people ended up coming to their doom there?
There's many theories of how you can look at it, but almost at the same time, is with all these shipwrecks that have happened there, as we said, like thousands of them, how could this place not be haunted, right? Like, how could you not have, like, this amassed negative energy? Oh, no,
people just
there
keep dying here. It's the damnedest thing.
It's the damnedest thing.
Yeah. And I know that, obviously, that there is you know, logical, you know, explanation for why that happens and why they're so tricky. And of course, and that explains why you have so many catastrophes happen there. But at the same time, you know, maybe the fact that you have so much of that death happening in the same place over and over and over again, you know, kind of referencing back to what we talked about when we talk about the suicide pond in Forest, right? That surely, you know, like, as we know, with, you know, any sort of energy leaves some sort of mark. So it's not that crazy to assume that this place has a vibe, to put it lightly.
It felt like these ships are like, their energy, like, just they're doomed to, like, might not even be the ship. It's just their energy is like reliving their last moments over and over and over again. And like some of them, you said, they get seen like every 50 years. Is that how long it takes to get enough energy to go back through it? Or what is the reasoning? I don't know. I mean, that's hard to say, but yeah. It's a really interesting thing. And then you have all these eyewitnesses over and over again that are seeing these things.
Yeah.
I would crap my pants if I saw a ghost ship. I don't mind telling you guys. So,
I thought it was it's super interesting history. Of course, you had super interesting history throughout the thing, but the part about the Goodwin Sands where they had tried to raise warning, you know, towers or whatever to keep people, but there's just no land to build on there. Mm-hmm. So it just doesn't work. It's
it's really super tricky. I mean, the sands keep moving, and I think it's like you can visit them, but it's like this one specific time of the year in June you can like ferry out of it, and they've played like the birds have played like a cricket game there or a super match or something, you know, just to prove that they can. But then after that, you just, you know, after a couple of weeks, you have to get out of Dodge and leave it, because like it will start moving again, because it's just sediment sands, like it just keeps slushing around it's so strange, because like we shipwrecks, we will call them wrecks, like you hit some an underwater cliff or something like that, a rock, in this case they just kind of get stuck there and get sucked into it, like it's just this vacuum, you know.
They get stuck in the sand, and then they get turned to one side or the other, and they're done for or ripped apart because of that. It's different than getting stuck on a rock and you're just there.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, like even if you try, like when you go at the beach and you have like the nice sand that there's no, you know, the dry one, and then when you go towards the wet sand, and if you put your kind of finger in it, and when you try to pull it out, you feel this suction that happens, and it's like, oh, can I pull my finger out?
Go
it's
stand
like
same in the and let the waves hit you, and all of a sudden you're a foot into the ground, you know, just standing there as you're sinking or moving around. Yeah,
same thing.
Yeah, well, and then we moved on to sea monsters, which I found one of the interesting to me was that so many sounded like huge snakes, for lack of a better, you know, they had similar descriptions, and these went for hundreds of years of these people seeing things, and they're not saying that it was 1,000 feet long, they're talking like 40 50 60 feet long, and it looked like, you know, similar to a snake. And that makes me wonder, and this is a few hundred years ago, how far-fetched could it have been to think that there was something out there that is now extinct that was still out there? Because at that time, we'd done zero exploration of the bottoms and really knew what was going on. Am I just living a pipe dream there? Or do you guys think something like that could have been true?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely could have been, and it absolutely could be, because the thing is, we've seen that with. I'm going to start from afar to make a point, so so bear with me. But I mean, you saw how it was with COVID, right? Like as soon as we all got back into the houses, then nature just started to reclaim. Like you see deer on the streets and stuff like that. Front of a Walmart or something. And what was happening then is like what we have kind of conquered of the ocean at the time was just literally the most top layer of water, you know, and the ships were sailing, you know, it's a pretty shallow amount of presence that we had. So there was creatures that probably roam pretty close to the top of the water that's now maybe they're pushed more further down because we have more action happening. We have so much more ships and we explore deeper and deeper. But that doesn't mean that those things cannot migrate vertically and just move further down where we can't reach them at this point.
It goes into that whole thing of what's down there, you know, and just it. I loved you were talking about, too, sailors would come forward and say, we saw this, and the whole ship, you know, the captain would come forward and they'd all be like, yeah, we saw it. And they'd come to land and people would be like, burn them.
Yeah.
You know, like it's
not, take them to trial and then they'd have to sit there. Yeah. And,
so finally they're just like, I ain't saying shit. And that's kind of, we take that into like modern day with pilots. See something in the sky, you don't say shit, you know, because of ridicule. Scientists don't really go and study a lot of these things because of the ridicule. So in a lot of ways, we haven't progressed that much in several hundred years.
No, absolutely. And Captain, that's true. I mean, Captain McQuay at the time, who saw like the Daedalus sighting, which is quite big and quite documented. And he hired an artist to draw it and everything because he just wouldn't back down. He's been like against the Admiralty. He says, like, I'm not going to lie. I saw what I saw. But, you know, they didn't have like Joe Rogan back then. So he couldn't go on it and be like, hey, look, I'm legit. You know, it's like it was a difficult you know, you liken it to the modern pilots, like it's a very good example. But a lot of people, then they gave their word. They were stand up. They didn't hire just crazy dudes back then in the, in the military. It just didn't happen. You could just, any decision could lead to all of these sailors' death. Well, so
Amen to that. Well, since you said Joe Rogan, I got a channel my inner Joe Rogan. Bro, would you do DMT with a sea serpent?
Brent, pull that up. Pull that up.
Yeah. Do you think that the serpent lives in assimilation?
Yeah. You know, you talked about a lot of those, and, you know, they were all over the place. And I mean, this really, for, you know, pun intended, scratched the surface with sea serpents. Do you have sea monsters? Do you have I keep saying serpents because I got serpents on the brain because that's what a lot of them sound like. Do you have a favorite? Do you have one that you were researching like, that one's really cool?
I think I really like the one with the U-boat.
That was fascinating.
Yeah.
That is like, because again, you know, Germans and British are at war at that time. Like, there's no really time for joking or piss takes. And like, they were in a really precarious position. You know, they were their vessel was pretty damaged. They were in the hands of the British, and they had to scuttle it in the end and destroy it. And they were interviewing all the Germans separately, and all of them gave the same version, that they were, you know, going up for air, because U-boats at the time obviously had to take in air physically. So they had to surface, and something just came out of the dark, and it just started bashing the U-boat to the point where it destroyed the cannon, and it just, they couldn't submerge it anymore after that, and they were stranded on a pretty special mission. They were all the way up next to Scotland, so that means that they were probably doing some recon or something on the British. So they were in a really tricky position. I don't think they'll just start saying, oh yeah, by the way, there was a sea monster here, and right, they'll just make it up.
I love that they're like, open fire on it, and it just kind of got mad and kept going.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, like, exactly.
Man, and then what's really crazy is they found that U-boat since then, you talked about, or they believe they
part
have.
Of it.
Part of it, yeah. You know, that's just a... I know it's before our time, but it's not that far removed.
Absolutely. There's just good evidence since then, and that's the thing that's why I like that story, because you know, you bring it down to the 20th century. Yeah, it's 100 years ago or something, but still, it's not as far back as talking about like Captain McQuay and all of that. We can absolutely trace it back.
Yeah, I also, you know, speaking of absolutely the human response of coming to shore and seeing a monster, something washed up that's still alive, and you just drum up the entire town to come and stab it until it's dead and take measurements of it. That was another, jeez, you know, where the entire town's like, yeah, that was there, and then we sold pieces of it to rich people.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that story, that's the thing, is like, we could not, like... When you were talking about which stories did we pick again for the documentary, how we structured it and all of that, there was no way to really tackle the important overall theme of our relationship between us and the sea, than to also show how, you know, how ignorant we are, and how, as ignorant, you tend to just attack the things that you don't know because you're scared of them, because they're in the unknown for you. And
that's the human way of, look at that, kill it. You know, that's terrifying.
I hope we've gotten better, and we definitely have gotten better since then. I hope we are getting better faster than destroying things. But we would have known a lot more probably about the ocean if people at the time were a little bit more tolerant towards, you know, what's happening. But it's the nature of humanity, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, there was a big sense of, what I do doesn't have any consequences on this planet, you know, and let's kill the whales, let's do this and that and the other, and... Well, anyway, and then we find out it does have consequences, because the next one you talked about with spectral sailors, and they sometimes come back to let us know, hey, you want to get married? Stuff like that.
Oh my gosh.
David, is that? I feel like this one was probably your favorite. I don't know why.
Oh, well, that's funny. It's close. I like the ghost ships one the best, but I love the stories for this one of seeing something by the sea and just getting that overwhelming sense of sadness, you know, from it. There's a lot of ghost stories, maritime ghost stories, of women on the coasts with a house that has one of those, they call it a widow's walk, where, you know, her husband goes out to sea, maybe as a captain or something, and and she goes up on the roof, and there's a little place with a railing up there that she can watch for him to return, and he never does, you know, except at night in the rain, throwing pebbles at the window.
yeah. You know, this one feels like a lot like these are, they could be, you know, true, or they just could be, you know, tales that people tell, stuff like that. It's an interesting way to deal with maybe the loss or to keep things, you know, alive. I don't know. And you know, it's interesting to me that all around the world, even outside of what you covered here, people have these same stories, though, or similar.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's so many stories of in any nation that has any sort of coastline, and you have stories like that, especially back in the day, because it's hugely hazardous to go into the sea. And, you know, on these, you know, little seashells we have, and, you know, it's at any point nature can just bitch slap you and you're done. I mean, absolutely. And the thing is, it's, yeah, so many stories like that. And it felt like I wanted to include, like, every one of these chapters, I think, does a different section of our relationship, and the different scale as well. And the ghost ships thing, they had that introduction with the big scale of it, and our journeying into something that's unknown, and then coming back to haunt us. Then the unknown, a part of the sea creatures and what can be lurking down there. And with this one, it just felt we needed to show, like, those little personal stories of people who live by the sea, and all this these tragedies of what can happen and how, you know, those come back to haunt us as well. So to really nail that, like, 19th century romanticism feel that kind of the sea gave me more than some of the other topics, I felt that section kind of explore that a bit more.
Very personal stories, it was different than the others. Definitely had a different spin. And then, you know, we rounded out with mermaids. I've never really studied mermaids. No spoiler alert there. I didn't know that originally they were not half women, half fish, but half birds. I love the first photo. It just showed, it looked like a chicken half a woman on top. And then you had those drawings, and I was thrown into my head of the old Kids in the Hall Chicken Lady sketches. I don't know if you ever saw that. But and then how things, as time goes by, it gets adapted to being, you know, half fish. And you talked about, you know, across the world. We just covered Selkies recently on an episode on here, you know, and the seal women and things like that. And then it was really interesting to see, you know, we think of them as the sirens and calling men to their death, or people trapping them and killing them, and over time how the thought of mermaids has changed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a great mythology and how they develop and how they evolve throughout the ages of all these stories of all the different mythologies around the world, and every civilization had its own version, and they all changed simultaneously with our evolution as humans. It was really interesting to put that at the end, because it was a great example it was a literal example of symbolism of our relationship with the sea and our merger with it, like, more and more as the more we understand it, where you have a creature that's literally half human, half, you know, sea creature. And what I found the most interesting about that is that in the first half, we explore the mythology and everything that sounds quite fairy-tale, you know, just information about mermaids that you might not know, and then in keeping the beautiful side and then the horrific side of them, and then to really kind of flip it all on its head. And I really wanted to finish with something that's like, well, here's a mermaid, or in this case merman story, that now we're gonna treat it as something that's, because it, you know, very serious, because it is very well documented.
I think mermaids and this whole thought of it is just this look on human nature. I mean, look at the men that say, oh, in the stories, they were so beautiful, I went to be with them and died. How horned up and gross are men that they see a half fish, half woman, they're like, that I want
it. Well, if you're Robert Pattinson, you know.
yeah, right. Yeah, sometimes it's okay. Or that dude in the one of the Pirates movies that fell in love with the mermaid they needed her tear. I when you had the merman, I'm sorry, but my head went to Zoolander, where he's like, I was a merman, dad, merman.
Exactly.
Of the four chapters, which one to you to you, George, do you find would be the scariest, or which one did you think was the spookiest? Do you have one?
Purely scariest. I mean, it's difficult because to me it's like different moods and different.
Yeah, they're all very different.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, when it's like if you're with friends and you're kind of having fun, you just kind of want something that's gonna make everybody equally terrified. You know, I think the if you put the sea monsters on, I think everybody's gonna start thinking it's like, oh, I'm not going into the sea again. Oh my god!
Yeah, everyone has a thing in their mind when you say sea monster, they see something. Yes. You know, possibly. Yes. Yeah.
But I think if you are kind of you know, a bit tired towards the end of the day, you just want to chill. You got your sidewall blanket, you know, you have something hot to drink, you know, and you're turning the film on, and you just everything, the lights are down. I think that first section from with the ghost ships, you kind of feel that kind of vast foggy horror of just kind of descend upon you. I think that sets you up right for the whole film, and it kind of keeps with it until the end. So I think that's why we chose it to be the first one, because I think it gives you that full atmosphere of what the experience is.
You got a quote in there at the end that I love, and it goes something like this, if I remember right. It's like, "The sea is the greatest reminder of our limitations as a race. Some things can't be conquered, and some things can't be explained." How true is that? And I think the sea is just a perfect example of that whole way. You know, it's a reminder. You know, you said something like you stand on the shore and you look out at places you can never walk. You know, that is so true. And I think that's why, just like dinosaurs capture the minds of children, because they're, you know, so do the sea and the deep, because it's the place that we're not welcome, but we still go, or we try to. And every time they go to new places, they uncover new mysteries. And we think as advanced as we are, we still know very little.
Absolutely. I think it just seemed, if we're going to talk about sea horror, if we're going to talk about nautical folklore, all these things, it felt so important to mention that weird relationship and that sense of exploration and danger. As you said, like, oh, the allure of the mermaid is the sea creature that takes you to a fairyland and she will love you forever. But at the same time, she might just like cut your throat and drown you. And, you know,
it's woman you're ever going to date. So,
yeah, exactly. So, you know, at the end of the day,
or man,
or man. Oh, absolutely. More literal throat cutting with men, absolutely. But
yeah, sadly so.
Yeah, but it's like I said, I think that's why it's such a good metaphor for that relationship you just described. You know, it's both alluring and dangerous, and it's such a good example for all the other human desires that we have in science and in developing new things that can both be dangerous if used incorrectly and hugely beneficial if used appropriately and with space and everything else. And the sea is kind of like our first real playground of on this planet to see how we react with something that's so vast and so unknown and so alluring and so kind and so dangerous and so terrifying at the same time. So that's why this documentary, definitely more than Northern Forest, it felt like it deserved a unifying theme, because it really brought back all the chapters together.
Amen.
Yeah, nice.
Alluring and dangerous was what David put on the email that he sent to me when he was trying to become the co-host on here, and it worked. So that's
all I sent. That's all it was.
be careful when you hear his singing. You might be
drawn to him. Yeah. No matter where he is.
I'm actually the opposite of a siren. I drive people completely away with my singing.
No, you're like an air siren when they hear you.
Like a real siren. So, George, what's next for you? Do you have any other plans? Or, like, I know you say you're a planner, or can you share with us what's coming up in the future?
I can share a little bit. I won't spoil all of it because we'll be announcing it soon. But yes, the third sidewall will be coming soon, and we'll be announcing soon what the topic is going to be. But the idea is going to be released for Halloween. So the idea is, so we have the whole kind of like first three Sidewalled films available for everyone for this Halloween.
Very cool. And very soon. Yeah.
Yeah. And you'll get a very good picture of what the whole series and the whole franchise is going to be. We're going to be introducing a couple more things, and, you know, hopefully people will love it. And this one, I think, is going to feel pretty, Halloween-y, and very soon we'll be announcing the
That's awesome. Topic. Well, I can't wait. I've loved everything you've done so far. And in the show notes, we're going to have links to everything. But tell our listeners, where can they find you, where they can find your work? Where should everyone go?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the States, you have even a few more options to watch Haunted Forests of England and Terrors of the Sea. So it will be on Amazon. It will be on Tubi, Roku channel, I think, and a few more. You'll be able to find it. Absolutely. And in terms of social media, you can find Sideworld specifically at Sideworld UK on Twitter. And then we have a Sideworld page on Facebook. And then for our company, if you want to see some of the other films we've made and some other plans that we have, that's at Rubicon Films UK. That's me and Jonathan who own it, and then everybody else who helps make these films. And yeah, you can find me as well at the George Popov. I don't think I say anything interesting, but if you want to find me, I'm there. Also, we're all on Instagram and all these other stuff as well. So yeah, you'll be able to find us, and you'll be seeing more information about Sideworld and where it can go. And if you're a fan of anything paranormal, historical, just like you guys, and we're all just fans of the same things, and it'll be nice to bring all these fans, and everybody is going to have a bit of a safe space where we can just enjoy all these different topics, and I think it will be a nice it's a nice place for everybody, and people enjoying it, we will make more, and I'm really excited for more topics and more exploration, not just in the UK, but the rest of the world as well.
George, like we said, thank you so much. We're going to go to break, and we'll be back with more Hysteria 51.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Well, Brent, that was fun. I gotta tell you, like, if you took a podcast and made it a film, I think this would be very close to what that is.
Yeah, like, it's a deep, deep dive into these. Like, it feels like a long topic, right? Yeah.
It is, yeah. It's like part documentary, part narration, storytelling audiobook. The visuals, it's
filled with lots of art and on location
old
shots
stuff, yeah. And it's a slow burn, but the subject matter is so interesting, I don't mind it. I don't need like half a second for every shot that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's kind of long, drawn out, really kind of sucks you in. I don't know if it'd be everybody's cup of tea because, a lot of people want fast paced and action and stuff, but this is right up my alley because I just love the subject.
Yeah, I think he's talking to the perfect crowd because podcast. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. And in documentaries like this, that's what I want, is that slow burn. He does a great job of kind of world building of these things that these people are going through, or these monsters or goats or you name it. So it's a lot of fun. And again, I think we said this the last time, it's like almost like, how do you know when to stop? I know he's going to change up, but this is another one where you could go and part two and part three and part 64. You know what I mean? Of just like, where do you stop? And he did more of the obscure things in a good way, which were fascinating. I didn't know a lot of these. The Goodwin Sands, holy hell, man.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
I can't believe I didn't know about that. It makes me feel right. fucking stupid, you know? And he's just like, oh, yeah, you know, there's thousands of ships. Literally, there's a they show in there one of those charters where they show all the ships that have capsized there or yeah. went down. It's over 1,000 that they know of. That's right. official. And they show there's just derelict ships rotting away in that whole pass today.
Yeah, yeah. It's just one of those weird features of the Earth. You know, it's not, we like to say, oh, is there some paranormal aspect to this or whatever, but the Earth can just be dangerous, right? Yeah. And this is one of those spots, especially for seafaring vessels, because it's so hard to know where it starts and stops. And then, you know, with weather and stuff, the tide can change really quickly. And so, yeah, somebody's thinking they're going to make up some time by sailing around the coast mm-hmm. and, you know, hugging the coast to you know, and then all of a sudden they just stop.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's it. They're doomed.
Ladies call me the Earth also because I'm known to be dangerous.
Oh, my God.
Sure, yeah. Lady... ladies call me Goodwin Sands because I wreck shit.
Ladies call me Titanic because never mind.
Because you go down on your maiden voyage. Because I was banged on by a bunch of dudes in Belfast.
Oh, man. Oh, and I broke into two pieces. Anyway, yeah, guys, go look this up. And if you watch this, make sure you check out. Well, we got, and I'm trying to get away from my banging days. We're going to have links in the show notes to Rubicon Films. You can check out his other feature films, his other documentaries. Like we said, Side World Haunted Forest, Side World Terrors of the Sea, and. He's got that special one that we can't know about yet, but it's coming out soon. More Side World action. Can't wait. I'm actually looking really forward to it. You can find links to all this in the show notes. And while you're looking for links, go to Hysteria Nation. Go to Facebook, search Hysteria Nation. Let us know what you think about this. And go to our Twitter. We're at Hysteria51Pod. George is on Twitter all the time. He's constantly posting. He posts about Hysteria 51 on there a lot. He posts links to our interviews. He's been a great guest, and he also keeps posting stuff in a good way. Like I love it. And he's definitely someone you should follow. We're gonna have links to everything on there. And hysteria51.com, you can find links to all of our stuff. Leave us voicemails. You can leave one through there, right there on our website, or 773-669-7277. Also, blurryphotos.org is another destination. What are they going to find when they go there?
They're going to find brand new Campfire Ghost Stories episode. A few stories, few pants crappers there. One of them's an Algernon Blackwood tale. So, you know, it's 1800s. It's Canadian wilderness stuff. It's a little different as a ghost tale, a ghost story, you know. This is the guy that wrote about the Wendigo, which was a very cool story. And this one, you know, is very atmospheric and tension-filled, I would call it. So anyways, Campfire Ghost Stories, Blurry Photober is coming up. Quizbangpod.com, that's a trivia one. We got a lot of stuff coming up for that. And if you're in the area in Parts Unknown, Colorado, please come out to our trivia nights. We have the first Thursday of every month. We're doing live trivia at the Crested Butte Center for the Arts. And we might be adding another one each month that's themed. So we might do like Harry Potter trivia and Star Wars and Marvel, you know, things like that. So
speaking
lots of stuff going on.
Marvel trivia, and you were just talking about the Wendigo, the first appearance of Wolverine was in Hulk 181. Well, technically the last page of 180 and 181. And he is fighting the Wendigo, Hulk was.
Oh.
And Wolverine goes to track and take out the Hulk. So that's fun. Then a little trivia for you.
Nice.
So those are fun.
Did you see the, they dropped a trailer for Werewolf by Night?
It is like this black noir film, film noir, old-timey. I loved it. I didn't know what was going on, and I liked that.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool. Seems
it like felt like a murder mystery suspense. I had no idea what was going on, and that was a lot of fun, because how many times you watch a trailer and go, well, there's the movie.
You know, probably.
You know,
so. Probably. I think it's a lot of on-screen death they're showing, but spoilers. Anyway, hey, thanks everybody who voted for us for the Paranormality thing.
Just closed up. We'll find out soon.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for us, Brent. I am not for Blurry Photos. We're going up against Bigfoot Collectors Club, which is some some dudes that are in TV shows and all that stuff. That's a big following. Kind of hard for an indie podcast to compete with. But thanks for voting. You know.
Well, thank you guys so much, and don't let Negative Nancy spoil your fun. We all voted for you, so. Here's what I know. I didn't even know that Bigfoot Collectors Club was a thing. So,
oh my God. People have said the same about Blurry Photos.
If you guys read
after
them,
10 years,
everything on that list, they open it up and there's a nomination time and everyone nominates shows and they pick the top, what was it, 4 or 5 of each one? And then there's voting. They do not pick the shows. Paranormality Magazine has nothing to do with that. It's funny to me because even if you go to the voting thing, then there's comments. This is a sham. Where's insert whatever show that person likes? Insert this. Right. How dare you? What kind of idiot came up with this list? The fans. And that's all it is. And we've asked our fans to vote for it, you know, and hopefully those other shows did. And if your show isn't on there next year, rally your troops. And Paranormality Magazine actually is a really great magazine. And for 99 cents a month, you can get the digital copy. It's worth it. It's worth it for, you know, they take a lot of pride in talking to people that do the stuff that we do. And people that we've, you know, been on here, they've been on the cover of it. So lots of people, you know, Derek Hayes has been on there. Mm-hmm. Into the Fray, she's been on there.
I'm trying to think. It's a who's who, man.
Yeah, really.
Coleman, Lyle Blackburn, all the people, all the names you probably know, some you don't.
Shannon, I'm surprised that Ryan hasn't been on there, or even us maybe one day. I'd love to. So, yeah. So, guys, give them some interest, because it's definitely worth it. And if your show's not on there, if you're another podcaster next year, rally the troops. You know, rally the troops. Even some of the people that were on there this year was like throwing shade. Like, you did that last year too. Why are you doing this? It's all voted on by the fans. So very much appreciated, all of you guys.
Yeah. And
with that said, I've been Brent.
I've been David.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. We'll be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite. Join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.